This is the Conversations with Eastside podcast. Eastside Church is a six-year-old urban church plant on the east side of Atlanta, serving an eclectic community of worshipers. My name is Ed Sohn, and I'm a member here at Eastside Church. I'm here with Tim Lloyd, lead pastor at Eastside Church. Today, we're going to discuss practicing resurrection. Hallowed be thy name. So, Tim, you want to just start us off with what's the origin of that phrase and its place as we think about our church's vision?
Sure. Well, back in 2010, when Eastside was still just a dream and a small group of people's hearts and minds, we went through the whole conversation of what's the vision, what's the mission, what are the values of this church that we want to see birthed in Atlanta. And we kept having this conversation of what's, you know, as Christians, as Methodists, as, you know, followers of Jesus, what's the thing behind the thing behind the thing behind the thing? And getting back to this whole why conversation that I think Right. we're going to return to a lot on this podcast. But so we said, what's under it all? Like, what's the point of the whole thing? And the two conversations that we kept having were the incarnation and incarnational Christianity and resurrection, because within Christianity, within the early Christian movement, the reason that it grew with such rapidity, the reason it took off the way that it did, was because there was a group of people who actually believed that Jesus had been catapulted into some new resurrection life, and they were having real experiences with a resurrected Jesus. And they believed that because Jesus had been catapulted into new resurrection life, someday God had plans to pull all of them too into a new creation, into a new mode of existence. And that is the reason behind the reason that the early church exploded the way that it did. And we're still talking about this 2,000 years later. So about the same time we were having that conversation about resurrection, one of the team members showed me this poem by a guy named Wendell Berry, and it's this brilliant poem that talks about sort of how can we get off the grid and how can we live lives that are radically different from what society asks us to do. And by the very end of the poem, he closes it by saying, practice resurrection. And it was sort of like the light bulb went on with all the team members. We just said, that's it. Let's go with this super simple mission statement as a church, because at the end of the day, God is about seeing dead things come to life and enter into new life. So one of the phrases we used a lot in the early days was, the resurrection of the world starts with the resurrection of the human heart. And as church, we're about seeing people come to life, enter into new life. As you read Paul's epistles, he's constantly expressing to these ancient churches that they can become spiritually awakened. They can experience a dimension of this resurrection life right now. Their physical bodies may feel like they're falling apart, but their spirits can be accessing this resurrection reality. And that's what being Christian is about, is already experiencing this newness of life in Christ. And we wanted to be about that as a church, and be a church where people were coming to new life. And then because of that, we as a body could be an agent to breathe new life into our broken world.
Right. You know, and I think it's worth taking a quick dive into some of the theology of that, right? So, you know, we talk about eschatology, right? And which is just a fancy word for future times, right? And kind of the end state, and what Christians believe about that based on, you know, what we see in the Bible, what Jesus said, what Paul said, what others have said and believed. And when you think about that, there's this concept of here but not yet, right?
Right.
This idea that although there is a future state where the world is golden and shiny and made perfect and new and kind of restored beyond its kind of Edenic splendor, right?
Right.
Where that's not current state,
right?
And yet we live as if reality to that now.
Right.
Right. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So if we speak to sort of like, if you think about resurrection in sort of two phases, right? There's this sort of spiritual dimension to resurrection that we can live into now. Our interior life can be transformed
right.
by a relationship with God, with Christ. And at the same time, we hope for and we look to the resurrection of the body, some sort of new embodied reality that on the other side of the other side of the other side, something new is going to happen and we're going to experience that. So right now what we do is we practice resurrection by pulling God's future into our present.
Right.
And that means that we enact the values of, we use the language a lot at Eastside, of kingdom. That's another way of just saying the realm of God, where beauty and mystery and goodness are just all that can be imagined. But we as a community want to drag that future back into our present. And that's one of the reasons that we've embraced the arts the way that we have, because we believe that we serve a God of creation and a God of new creation. In Genesis, we are revealed the God of creation, the first creation. And in the book of Revelation, when God said, "Behold, I'm making all things new," we see that God is also a God of new creation. So we stand in between those two realities, right? We're in the first creation, we hope for the second creation, and as the church, we create, we make, because that's patterned after the heart of God. So we're bringing the future kingdom into the present by making art, by being the people who embody the way of Jesus and embody what we call our resurrection practices.
You know, I think that's pretty profound, frankly, when you, the more you really reflect on that, and what happens when we take something that is in our mind's eye and in our creative spirit and our imagination, and I'm not a super creative type, but and then breathe that into reality and have that manifest and take like a canvas and turn it into a picture that's got emotion and what it means for us, you know, as art, as an expression of that new life that we're breathing into the world, you know. And I also think about as you get into, you know, you mentioned the early church, and it's I think it's fascinating. You know, and I could hear you emphasizing this in your voice, that the early Christians had these experiences that to everything that we understand about what they were going through as the early church were, you know, irrefutably or empirically for them, you know, demonstrating that there is this future life that awaits them and how that transforms their current life, right? How that changed everything for them to know that. And I think that that's unbelievable. I think that's critical. And, you know, that gives us hope in the darkest moments of life. Right. That gives us, you know, confidence and faith in what is otherwise, you know, moments that are filled with despair. And I think that one of the things, I think I preached on this actually a while back.
Was it your pre-Advent sermon?
Yeah, right? And there's this whole idea of like, wow, you know, like, what are we really waiting for? You know, like, why do we go through the paces of this? But I was thinking really in terms of Advent as well as in terms of Lent, you know, and Lent and the Easter season. And there's this whole journey to the Passion Week, right? And the Holy Week and Palm Sunday and Thursday and Friday and the cross and this like just absolutely, you know, this moment that ripped history in half, that you know, tore the earth apart, that this dark cloud was over everything, and it feels like it's drama, you know, it almost feels like melodrama in a sense. But out of that moment, like in the darkest despair of, you know, think about the disciples and the early Christian movement and the followers of Christ that walked into Rome or walked into Jerusalem rather, you know, like to have those hopes so utterly crushed,
right,
and have that darkness of despair that, you know, your, you know, radical, loving and ferocious and an incredibly wise rabbi was the movement was ending. You know, he was being pinned to a cross and has been, you know, convicted as a felon. That out of that comes new life, right? And out of that comes
you nail hope to a cross,
and
think it's dead.
And it's incredible that it's alive against all odds. Right. Yeah. And that like that on the other side of it, there is real life. I think that for that to have followed that emotional roller coaster in the early church would be transformative, to know that, we bear witness to like the real new life. And so how that would change everything is something that I don't think that we can fully grasp. But it really informs me and gives me hope for even like dark moments. And you look at the world, and you've preached on this, you know, where it's like sometimes you look around the world, you're like, oh gosh, like this is terrible. Sure. You know, like it's depressing. And, you know, the state of division in our country and the dark thing, the things that are happening across the world. And, you know, like I have a passion around, you know, combating human trafficking and just like some of the darkest acts of humanity that are happening. And you look into that and you just say, like, you know, all is lost. And like you can go straight to the sort of ashes and sackcloth kind of moment of just like total despair.
Yeah.
And that it's ingrained in our core belief that no, there's new life, that there's something to that is fighting against those forces of evil with good. And you know, making, binding up and making new everything that's broken in the world.
Yeah. I mean, that the doctrine of resurrection is basically the idea that death threw its worst against God and God still came out the other side victorious, and that's going to ultimately apply to everything.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, there are days where that's a tough doctrine to preach to people, because they sometimes folks don't want to hear that. They want to be present acknowledging the darkness, and sometimes that's the right thing. But then other times, like on Resurrection Sunday, it's no, darkness has its time, but it will not ultimately prevail. There's this resilience to God's work in the world, and we're called, but that's the reality of the church. We are called to be the agents of resurrection right now. We're not called just to wait around for the someday when God fixes things. God calls us to right now be the literal hands and feet of the Messiah at work in this world.
And that's a distinction, I think, that is unique to the way that we express that, you know, at Eastside and even as Methodists, because, you know, there are still, you know, expressions of Christian faith that are very much, you know, us against the world. And we just need to kind of...
hunker down.
Yeah, hunker down and, you know, bind ourselves and be firm in our faithfulness and persevere until finally, you know, Jesus will come and like wipe this evil off the face of the planet and like make everything good. But it's not the responsibility of the church. You know, the responsibility of the church is to be faithful and to bring more people into Noah's Ark, you know, but not ultimately, you know, the transformative arrival of the kingdom is something that's like an alien event that's separate and apart from, you know, Christian, the agency of the church, right? And I think that that's not our belief, right? That our belief is that, no, we are that transformative agent, that over the course of the next however many hundred years or however long it's going to be, it's our passion, it's our mission, that like we are the hands and feet of Christ in the earth. And that when God promises to make things new in the dark corners of the world, you know, like I think about Exodus 2 and I think about how God is talking to Moses and saying like, I've heard the cries of the oppressed and the slaves in Egypt and my people who are under they're being crushed by the oppression of Egypt. So I will go to them. And then he tells Moses, so now go.
Right.
Right. And it's like, I will go to them. So now you go.
Yep.
And there is this, two sides of the same coin. When God acts, it's because we're acting.
Right.
You know, and like we're that agency of God in the world. And so that's a different view. You know, that's not a view that's shared universally across the church necessarily, the universal church.
I was raised in a very different tradition than the United Methodist tradition, and there was this series of books that came out called the Left Behind series.
Oh yeah,
and I don't know how much folks are still. It's been a while, and I remember
clothes folded on an airplane seat.
Right. Yeah. I'm on a trip out west. I think I pushed through four or five of those books, but the premise is that, you know, there are these verses in Paul's letters that talk about just kind of language of the twinkling of an eye, or the trumpet will sound, and then there's going to be this thief in the night. There's going to be this giant divine evacuation, and God's basically going to pluck out all the saved people and then leave all the damned people on planet Earth for this horrible period of, I don't even remember how many years, 7 years or something.
Yeah,
I think. And it's weird. It's a weird theology. It's called like dispensationalism, I think, is the more academic name for it. I just call it rapture theology. But it's the idea that creation is on a highway to death, darkness, horror, and ultimate destruction.
It's a ticking time bomb.
And that the Christian hope is in an ethereal spiritual existence in a place we call heaven, where there's, you know, clouds, angels, and harps. And that is not But that is not the New Testament vision.
Right.
That's really...
That sounds like Ra's al Ghul. Right? Like, we got to burn Gotham down and build it up new again. Right. Because there's no hope. There's no hope.
But if you believe that about creation, then it explains why energy policy and folks don't have an interest within the church in taking care of the environment, and why within Christian circles you see this pushback against, you know, talking about global warming and talking about stewarding the earth. Why would you steward something if you're going to throw it away like an empty cereal box?
Well, and what's interesting is that the flip side of that is it explains why, you know, the United Methodist Church has, like, for instance, a strong history of prison ministry, right? Why would you spend time with the dregs of society unless you believe that there's, like, hope and rehabilitation and resurrection on the other side of that,
right?
You know, and like that's the flip side, is that if you believe the other way, then you can't, you almost have a responsibility to act on that hope, right? Yep.
And that's, you know, that's what in Wesley's small groups, I mean, that's what they did. They went out and they served the desperate, destitute poor, poverty that was rampant in England at the time. And they were like these literal lights of Christ going out and doing, working with the least and the last and the lost, who nobody else, you know, like you said, the dregs of society. And that's our heritage. Those are our roots. And a couple years ago, I don't really know, maybe 10 years ago, General Conference adopted a mission statement for the Methodist Church. We hadn't had one before that, but it was an attempt to sum up our theology of eschatology. And it's the mission of the Methodist Church is to make disciples of Jesus Christ, not so that when the rapture happens, God plucks out all the good people, but for the transformation of the world. I think you could easily swap out the word transformation for resurrection if you wanted to, but to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world, not for my own personal spiritual fulfillment, but I want to be transformed because I want to be transformative in the world. It's always about those who aren't here yet, right? It's always about those who haven't been reached. It's about the darkness that hasn't been transformed, with the Methodist sort of vision of what we're called to do. And I love that. And that's one of the reasons that, like, I latched on to the Methodist denomination, because, like, I can get behind that sort of theology that says, no, we're here to do something.
Yeah. I mean, kingdom come, will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
We say it every Sunday in church.
That's what it is. So let's talk about what it means to practice resurrection at Eastside. And we have sort of core practices around that. You know, how did those develop, and what do those look like?
Well, if you've been around me for any amount of time, you know that I'm a fan of simplicity, simple church, and, you know, people in Atlanta are all too busy. So we realized very early on that what people were looking for wasn't a church that had 1,000 programs. People were thirsty for an authentic experience of worship. They wanted to come together and experience God in an authentic way. So for us, worship has always been a central dimension to who we are. Not just like, oh yeah, we have a worship service. No. Like, for us, worship is incarnation. Like I mentioned incarnation earlier, and that's a fancy theology word for God entering the world in the person of Jesus. God, Emmanuel, God with us, God incarnates. We believe incarnation happens every Sunday at worship in the Eucharist, which is why we celebrate communion every Sunday. Jesus meets us in the cup and in the breaking of the bread. But Jesus also meets us in the gathered body. Like, when we come together as a corporate body, we are the resurrection body of Christ, and we get fed by the Eucharist. The Eucharist fills us, and it empowers us to then go back out and be these transformative resurrection people that we are seeking to become. So worship is central. It's a core resurrection practice, but not just worship. Worship that includes the sacrament of Holy Communion has always been central to who we are.
Right.
Our second resurrection practice is growth. We are not of the belief that salvation is like a light switch or like a binary on or off. We believe salvation at Eastside Church, we're all being saved. We're not
every day. Right.
Every day. None of us have arrived. I haven't arrived. And, you know, the early Methodist, Karen Shive talked about this in her sermon a few weeks ago, but the early Methodist used the language of, I think, what, 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. We're all in progress. So we constantly are pushing one another to grow in our faith, to grow in our walk, to grow as disciples of Jesus. We want to seek maturity, because that maturity then enables us to to do more and better, more powerful ministry in the world. So we grow through worship. We grow through being in a core group. We grow through our third core resurrection practice, which is to serve. And you can't read Philippians chapter 2 without realizing that that kenosis, this outpouring of our power for the sake of others, is it's central to the incarnation. It's central to Jesus. When we see the, you know, one of the reasons we pour the juice instead of just have it in the cups already is so we can see this image of God pouring God's self out for us every Sunday when we have communion, and then we receive what God pours out. And that's this idea that we are called to be pouring ourselves out for one another within the body, but also outside of the body for the world. And so we seek to be a church who practices radical service. And you know, we've gone through different iterations of what that looks like for us. You know, the core groups are encouraged to find ways as a group to pour themselves out in service. One of the ways we've practiced this is through our Sunday meal ministry, our brunch ministry, our community closet. Our church has raised, for the size of our church, we've raised tremendous amounts of money for mission, from supporting New American Pathways to the teachers' salaries in Laganav in Haiti to... we've bought goats for the communities in Haiti. We've just done a lot of great work internationally, right, as well. But to serve is our third resurrection practice. And a part of that serving is the work we're seeking to do with justice, our work with LGBTQ inclusion, as we seek to become a reconciling church, and the work we're doing with racial justice and seeking to bridge that divide as a body. So there's a lot more I could say about that.
Right.
But worship, grow, serve, simple church. Do a few things and do them well, as St. Francis famously said. So,
you know, I think those three practices are rich and have a lot of depth, and we could talk about each one of them probably for hours. I mean, worship as a resurrection practice to me is absolutely right. And you mentioned, you know, the table, which is for many of us that attend Eastside Church, you know, one of our favorite parts of our worship service, and the fact that we do it every week. And you mentioned how important that is in terms of incarnation. But also, you know, you're always very intentional in the liturgy of the table to ensure that we're talking about sort of when that day comes, right? When all creation is made new, and we're sort of at that feast of the future.
Right.
Right. And I think that that's crucial, is to understand that, you know, we do this not only in remembrance of Christ as he commanded, but also looking forward and understanding.
Anticipatory, yeah.
Right. And that's the again, the here but not yet kind of pulled into, as well as worship as a general practice, right? Like the scripture describes in some, you know, kind of nebulous ways, the future state of the world as really kind of reveling in the glory of God.
Yeah.
And that's a picture that we can participate in today.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's worship. Growing is absolutely resurrection work, because it's, for a lot of us, taking areas of our lives that are bleak and that are dark, and just internally kind of like that resurrection practice, and,
yep,
and internally being made new and being made whole and being renewed, and not just restored, but made different, made new and transformed. And yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, Colossians, Paul says that we already have access to the resurrection life. It's not like we don't have to wait around for it.
Right.
But through these practices, we are being made to be alive.
Yeah. And right? that's growth. And we did a long series on the fruit of the Spirit and how that's botanical, mm-hmm, right? How that's something, yeah, that gets planted and then gets transformed and life grows, right? And yep, it's fruit. It's fruit that bears in its season, you know? And so I think growth is absolutely transformational. But I think serving is the one that I think of the most when I hear practice resurrection. And I was mentioning kind of earlier this idea that, you know, we can have this great hope in the midst of despair and darkness, and how the early church must have viewed that, you know, as transformative. And obviously it took root and really spread. I think of that kind of like in a DC Comics world, right? The Ra's al Ghuls and the Batmans and the Supermans and the Wonder Womans of the world, as kind of the forces of good,
yeah,
that are standing up against a tidal wave of evil and darkness. And what seems like just the direction of the world that feels like it's unstoppable.
Yeah.
It's where we stand up and we say, no, like we're here to serve and to transform and to make new the world one life at a time, you know, like one act of service at a time, one act of kindness at a time, you know, to breathe life and goodness and sort of defend that love and that service against, you know, what is otherwise like a sort of self-consumed, selfish, you know, dark world.
You know, we have people in our church who are fostering, and I think about, like, we have people in our church who are fostering, who are running missions, like Atlanta Missions for the Homeless. We have people who are working at the CDC trying to eradicate disease. Like, we've got all these people who are, like, called to these huge vocations.
We have people in Nepal, like, overseeing relief.
Yeah, we've sent folks to Nepal, yeah, doing transformative work. I mean, I'm just amazed by, you know, just East Side aside, just the way people in their personal vocational lives. I mean, you sit on the board of I don't know how many nonprofits, and it's just incredible to watch this and to participate. But all of this, like, if you look back at the early church took in the orphaned female babies that were left out to die, and they raised them as their own. That's the kind of work that the early church did.
That's literally new life.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. And throughout history, you know, the Christians built hospitals and schools, and we were salt and we were light, right? And at some point along the way, it seems like we lost that vision. But
absolutely. I mean, but, you know, it's our goal and our vision to resurrect resurrection and to bring that back and to, you know, through our corporate worship and through our, you know, growth and our spiritual growth and through our, you know, radical service. You know, like you said, and I think about Jesus saying the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and serve as a ransom for many. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like that's there is something to the core of our belief. If we claim Jesus as our sort of the person with whom we are so obsessed that we deem him, you know, a veritable deity in our midst.
Yeah.
That when we think about that pattern of Christ set before us, I mean, that's, you know, that's the path that we follow. You know, some closing remarks. Let's say someone's listening to this and is like, yeah, practice resurrection. That's what I want to do. I want to find a way to do that. What are some easy things to turn to, both maybe in the worship, grow, serve categories, or maybe just tips to kind of orient themselves to a resurrection orientation? Yeah. How would people do that?
Well, I think I'll return to the idea that the resurrection of the world starts with the resurrection of the human heart. And I would say all of us need to be filled to be able to pour out. So
right.
I think we start by, you know, joining the body and being in worship, being in community, getting into a core group, and many of us need to experience healing first so that we can become healers. And I think that I would encourage, if you've not been a part of a church or if you've not been in church for a long time, come and just receive for a while. And then I think this is where we all have to do some soul searching. But I mean, there's easy ways to plug in. You know, you can serve our neighbors through brunch. You can help with the community closet. You can get involved in the Haiti partnership. But there's also a vast array of ways that you as an individual can, and we have the East Atlanta Kids Club right down the street. They're always looking for mentors. New American Pathways is always looking for folks to teach English to refugees. So there's all these like incredible organizations in Atlanta that you can plug in with your growth group or personally. So I just throw a few of those up there. And Eastside's always talking about what's the next right thing for us to do as a community, for us to sort of mobilize around. And we're in a season of discerning right now. Our leadership is of asking God, you know, what's God's next big dream for our church in terms of service and in terms of transformative work as a whole body. So
awesome. Well, thanks so much. This has been great. And we'll catch you all next time.
Thanks all.